when Rudy used to teach class, he would yell at us a lot. It's pretty intimidating. One of the things he would yell was, "Don't move." So if you just scratch your nose or your hair, he would really be infuriated by that, because the stillness of the class is a profound stillness. It's an earned stillness. It's a rarity in the human experience that we have real quietude. And so when people disturbed that in the class, he made sure you knew that you were contributing to the noise of the world and not to the journey inward into the place of real quietude. It's really interesting sitting here, seeing all of you in your home setting and seeing all the variables of psychic spacing, if you will, where each of you live, not just materially, but in terms of your own brain-mind chemistry. And it's different than when you come to class here. Somehow, having us all in the same space is a very, if you will, indoctrinating experience. We are all brought into simultaneity in a way. But when you're all in your own home, you're also very much in your own mind, in your own emotional space. And when I work with you, it's like very different than when I work with you here. In a way, it's very good, because I get to see the level of distraction, the level of mental activity, the universe of the emotional being within. And my job, if you will, my work, the feeling that comes over me is kind of embrace you as you are, and then try to quietly shift the chemistry or the dimensionality, if you will, of your space and your time-space existence and bring it into alignment. Because the misalignment that we often experience in our home is different than when we're in a class setting, where we've left all of that behind and we just focus in on stillness, openness, and then there's the teacher very physically available, and if all goes well, an enormous energy that allows you to tune in to the energy, kind of like going to a concert and a good song is someone singing a good song and the whole room is like tied in, or going to a football game and everybody's focused on the singularity of the football floating through space. And in a classroom setting, there's a kind of continuity of focal point that brings us into a oneness or a one-pointedness that is very powerful. When you are sitting in your home, alone, together with others, however it is, and trying to have a meditation, there's all this other stuff in the air and in the atmosphere and all these subtle cues that are playing in your mind and your brain, and trying to bring all of that down into a collective focus is hard. And, you know, I know when I sit with each of you, my goal internally is to find a harmonic, if you will, a moment of, okay, there, we're there. It doesn't necessarily mean that you will stay there. And I see that many of you don't stay there, but you have an opportunity to stay there. You have an opportunity to go into this place that is very restorative, renewing, quieting, calming, available to the what is of existence. And this is a doorway that you choose to walk through at least once a week, ideally more often. And when you walk through it, you actually go into a place that is known to you. And it's a place that knows you. So when you get there, there's a sense of home, welcome home. Very powerful space of being. And many of us feel it when we go to sleep at night, but of course it becomes unconscious. It becomes a welcoming that we go, okay, and you give yourself over to it and you let yourself disappear into a kind of nothingness. Spiritual practice, as said this many times, is very similar in its content and its feeling, only instead of going unconscious and into darkness, you go into clarity and awareness. And it feels the same way as sleep. It feels like, oh, where you belong, how you want to be, how you want to feel. In this unusual period that we're going through, which is affecting everybody in their own particular way, and it's hard to give a generality to anybody, except that nobody knows what the next day will bring, what the next week will bring. We have no awareness of future. We can try to imagine it, we can try to position ourselves to enter it, but really we have no idea. So there really is a very powerful universal force bringing us down into this stillness of the present moment. Well, you can do whatever you want with that. You can sit there and become anxiety-ridden, unhappy, wishing it were otherwise, trying to plan for a future that you can't see or really understand. You can suddenly go back into past tense and start to think about the what was and what could have been and what might have been. You have all those options available. But what really, really is operating in the stillness of this moment is that everything, past, present, future, is right now. It is collectively here. And you are responding to that in a series of emotional reactions, mental reactions, physical reactions that keep you, in a way, dancing in this space of timeless being. Some of you, some of us, will have moments of real difficult emotional experience. Some people will feel trapped. Some people will feel it shouldn't be like this. Some people will feel that, how did I get here? Why is it like this? What is life itself? I mean, all of these big issues can come into play when you wake up every day and the same appears. And in a way, our ancestors had that. They woke up every day. They didn't have TV to turn on, the newspaper to read. They didn't have anything to distract them other than the fact that you got to maybe put another log on the fire or you got to go out and kill a deer or something of that nature. You just woke up. You woke up to the what is of that moment. And that moment could be rainy. It could be sunny. You have to move deeper into the cave. You move, run outside to get water. Your day was very directed by the immediacy of things. We have lived in such a strange, distracted culture where we don't have to face even being outside, even what it is to, whether it's rainy or not rainy, it doesn't matter to us. We are so protected in so many levels. And what we really have to learn to do is, one, embrace that we are both inside and outside at the same time, that we live in a non-dualistic reality where inner and outer are one thing. Where we're positioned in that inner and outer is related to your good fortune, if you will, or bad fortune. You will find yourself somewhere in the dichotomy of really wonderful and really awful. Somewhere in that space, you are going to exist, and you are going to have feelings that kind of reference that. You'll also have thoughts that reference that. If you're in your mind, you will have to deal with a very superficial level of being and distraction and trying to deal with happy thoughts, sad thoughts, anxious thoughts, loving thoughts, whatever comes in your mind and goes out of your mind, if you meditate deeply, you can quiet that down. Just kind of let it go. Pay attention to breathing, pay attention to a mantra, whatever it is, pay attention to this idea of asking for help to surrender. And then you go deeper, and you go deeper into the realm of emotional life, feeling life. Feeling life for many of us is more real than mental life. We have these very powerful senses of well-being or not well-being. And we worry about that, and we try to figure out what to do about it. How do you change your feelings, and how do you deal with the fact that you can feel so elated at one moment and so depressed at the next moment, and angry and then happy, and all of the alterations of these incredible emotional dialogues in yourself. And that really is no different than what's happening in your mind, except it's a deeper level. It's in a way a richer level. And you need to go into that space in the same way you go into your mind, and you do your breathing, you do your mantra, you do your asking for help to surrender. You go into the emotional life as it's unfolding, this realm of feeling, and you just breathe. You ask for help. Help to, as Rudy would say, let go, surrender. Let it go. And find out where you arrive when you do that. Generally, where you will arrive at will be a place not released from negative feeling, not into happy feeling. You go into a place that in a way transcends feeling. It's there, but it no longer drives you. It no longer impinges upon you. It no longer demands of you. It's just there. You acknowledge it. You don't have to pretend it's not there. You don't have to try to hide in some hole away from your feelings. And you certainly don't have to do things like smoke or drink or something to abolish your feelings, because that gives no muscle to you at all. What you need to do is just sit with that space and watch what happens. There is a power of simple being, not being or feeling this or feeling that, just being. And being has a quality of, it's called well-being. So the word wellness comes up, or wholeness, or maybe even contentedness, but it's not a word that has opposites. It's not well-being as opposed to unwell-being. It's not content as opposed to disgruntled. It's just a state of balance, ease, harmony. And it is foundational for human beings to get to that place. And if you are not in that place, it's simply because you're not doing the work. It doesn't happen by itself. It happens as a result of effort or practice. What happens in the ideal version of your spiritual life is you go, okay, here I'm in a state of whatever it is, floundering or misery or terror or, you know, whatever can happen, especially in times like this. And so it actually demands a greater effort on your part. And it really means sit down, sit still, take that breath, hold it, ask for help to please help you let go of all of your struggle and all of your drama and all of your noise, and just enter into this place that goes, okay, it's okay, you're okay. It's one thing to do this theoretically or to think about doing it or to talk about the wonders of meditation, you know, and how, you know, give it a kind of a voice, but the reality is the doing. The doing leads to being. That's what's really important. If it's just doing for its own sake, it's just activity. But when it becomes being, activity stops. You don't need it. You just are. You just are. And when you really are in a very profound sense, a lot of activity comes into the system, a lot of having to do the dishes and having to run outside and pick up the broken branches of the tree or whatever the things are that are driving you moment to moment. All of that fits into the simplicity of being. And what really starts to happen, and this is the key to the awakened, enlightened being, you discover that the parts of you that are angry, resistant, at odds with, fighting with, wishing it were other than it is, all of those elements of you are the very thing that you are trying to learn to move beyond. As long as there is a you relating to all of this, there will be suffering. The trick is to see the you arise, and it will. You'll wake up in the morning anxious. You'll wake up in the morning thinking you have the virus. You'll wake up in the morning going, I don't want to do this today, or whatever your negative things are. And you may wake up very happy and thinking, this is great, a day full of possibility. But it's the stuff that you don't like that tends to get in the way. It tends to be out of flow. And when you start to feel these anxious, dark, difficult feelings, you can't ignore them. You can't wish them away. You can't blow them away. You have to do this really profound thing, which is go, okay. You accept their being. You accept them as part of the totality. And in the acceptance of it, the reaction to all of that starts to evaporate. And you just are that which contains, if you will, everything. Good and bad, happy, sad, up and down, love and hate. You are this space in which all of these things work, and you are free, if you will, of having to be defined by them. When they define you, when they make you say, I'm miserable, I'm depressed, I'm unhappy, that's an illusion. That says there's a you and an it. And I can only tell you the promise of a meditative spiritual life is an awakening to there is no you and it. There only is. There only is this, whatever it is. If you don't like it, yes, you can make some effort to change it. You can make some effort to change it, but much of it cannot be changed except for your response to it. The thing you can change is this very simple space in you that reacts to it. Rudy used to call it resistance. Resistance is fighting what is. If you're fighting what is, and this is a time where, believe me, the culture, the whole world around us, the whole world is fighting what is. Maybe part of that's real, part of it is necessary. We don't want to give in to the death's door, which is waiting for all of us if we're not careful. So in a way, there's a certain fight, but it's also a kind of respect for what is. It's a redefinition of how we live in relationship to the world that is happening around us. And when you find yourself in a place of real acceptance and harmony and okayness with the world, you go about your day. It defines how you go about it. When you put your mask on and you walk outside, you don't get angry at putting on your mask. You don't get angry at somebody else for not putting on their mask. You find your way in the simplicity of your day to simply be. And as I talk about pretty regularly now, trust. Trust the day. Trust what's brought up in you. Trust the feelings. Trust the emotions. Trust the thoughts. Look at all of them. You don't have to become weighted down by them. You don't have to have this automatic sort of interaction with everything as though it's because it's arisen, it must grab your attention. All it has to do is arrive, and all you have to do is go, okay, okay. Sadness, anger, depression, anxiety, happiness, expectation, fear, boom, 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 boom. All these things, and you just go like that. When you do that, you will find you have a space, or if you will, a spaciousness that can allow for everything. And as the you that is defined by mind, feeling, thought, action starts to become more spacious itself, there is a freedom of being and a alignment and a joy and a harmony in being that is shockingly beautiful. Beautiful. And you know it when you feel it. You know, I reference so often the chords that are struck in the Great Symphony and how they speak to you. It's like somehow, Beethoven, Schubert, they find these moments and you go, it's like you build toward them, you wait for them, and then they come and they go, oh, and they just give you all of the pluses and minuses, the ups and downs, the sour chords, the brilliant melodic lines. They bring it all together and they make you feel whole. They make you feel really whole. And that can come, last week I asked people to write poetry. A lot of people did, surprisingly, and sent me beautiful poems. But the reason I asked people to write poetry was because you can take the emptiness of space and fill it. And you can fill it with something beautiful. You can draw, you can just dance in the room by yourself, you can sit at a piano, you can go for a walk and look at the sky and just have a dialogue with the birds. There are so many ways to fill time and space, especially when you've been given so much of it. We have all this time ahead of us. And, Blanche and I were watching these music shows, The Voice, American Idol, things like that. And they're over. They're over. We don't have that, whatever that is, that distraction ahead. And so rather than, what's the next distraction, just find a way to be. Find a way to be in the absence of distraction. And that's really what I think a lot of our teaching is about right at this moment in time, because distractions are kind of becoming tiresome and repetitive. How do I find the endlessly new? The endlessly new. And I will tell you, because I've been a writer for so many years, for me, the endlessly new is creation. Opening up to the blank page. Putting something where nothing ever was before. Creating something beautiful. I still do my photography. And I'm writing. I think I've told you this. A big hotel show for Las Vegas. I am finding ways to reach out to people, bring hello, love you, how are you to people, filling space with kindness, love, joy, simplicity is a wonderful thing. Filling space with your anxiety, you can do that. It might actually help you see it if you can put it on paper or put it on paint or find a way to, just bang on the piano. It's okay. But what you're trying to do is find a way to fill time and space with creation of something that did not exist before. And that, if you're lucky, will be a movement toward beauty. It can also be really writing letters to people you care about and letting them know that. Writing a note to the person you live with. There's so many ways to fill space and make it new and see what emerges. It's a really extraordinary thing. And I think so many people are just wallowing in their discomforts and their fears and their anxieties. And that it robs you of what is real in your life. And what is real in your life is that underneath all of that is being, and the essence of being is well-being. And if you really go dimensionally with that, and a word I'm not using very often, but there's a dimensionality to being that rises up and expands into something so beyond the world as we know it, so beyond day-to-day life, the expansion of being that goes into eons of reality. Is a doorway that you come to through your meditation. But you have to stop thinking. You have to stop worrying about your thought, your feelings. You have to stop being caught by the time-space continuum. You have to let go. Just let go. And open and open and open. and you will be guided. I've said this to you probably every class. At the core of well-being is a directive, is a teacher, is a stimulant, if you will. It's a higher knowing that tells you what to do. It's directional. It is navigational. There is something in us that knows what to do and how to be. And when you find that, it is not just in this singular dimension, it is way beyond that. And if you really touch base with that, this experience of spiritual being starts to lift you way off the earth, way off the world as we know it. And it starts to give you a sense of something so big that the idea of a pandemic, the idea of social isolation, just become little annoyances. There's so much more going on here, guys. There's so much available to us. We are creative beings. We can reinvent ourselves. We can reinvent the world. We can share love and kindness and goodness with everyone we know. We have the ability to bring to the table that which people need and are hungry for. And all it has to do is with you facing the blankness of the moment and filling it with something really, really worthy. Whatever it is, something that you're directed to do by your own heart. Reach out, give, create, be, and see how that changes the equation every day. So, this is the, in a way, it's the pandemic talk. And in a way, it's the social isolation talk. And in a way, I give it week by week. And I don't know all that more to say, but I just want to turn the tables on you so that you know that it is up to you to take charge of what's going on and not to be the victim of or the recipient of the larger social fabric, which is kind of eroding right now and having a lot of problems. You can be the stuff that holds it together, gives it purpose, gives it meaning, and helps other people through it, not by just standing on soup lines and handing out food or sending money to this and that, which you can do, but being filling time and space with the best of your being, the best of who you are, and sharing it with others. So, if anyone has questions, I'm happy to respond. But in the end, it's really, really a time for you to own your own path. Really, nobody else is going to do it for you now, and it is never was anybody else to do it for you. It's always been yours. And if you want to know what to do, go inside. It will tell you. So, that it. Okay, if there's anybody on the other page, I'm missing you. So, okay. Thank you, guys. Next week, we'll do this again, same time, same station. And thank you for showing up, and thank you for being still pointed. And next week, also turn on your mute buttons so that we don't have little background noises, and try to sit as still as possible so that that urge to yell at you doesn't come up in me. Love you.